Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, it is time to begin a new series, but before we get into the new series, I do have some comments to read you. In fact, what I'll do is I'll read one comment and I'll reserve one for the next program. But this is, "Hello, JBL. I thoroughly enjoyed today's program. One whole hour. It was so refreshing to listen to young people who are so polite and obviously who love to read. I found myself smiling throughout the program. I do hope this program inspires other young people to keep reading, as it has inspired me, though I'm not young. I have always loved to read plain, old-fashioned books. I do have a smartphone, a laptop, and a tablet, but I prefer to read books with pages. So please keep up the good work so that we can keep on listening to JBL and to keep reading. Thank you, Mr. Leap, and to all the people behind the scenes who make this program possible." So we can also put out a shout-out to Josh, our producer. So thank you, Josh, for helping us get these programs out there. So that's really good. Well, I got to tell you a story, and that's what JBL's all about, telling stories, but this is my story. Now, my wife and I have been working diligently for a little over a year to get our health back in shape, and we actually joined a gym. We've been walking together. We have been watching very carefully what we eat. Of course, we love JBL. We love doing it together, and so we want to make sure that we stay healthy. Now, I've also taken up running again, and I'm really very passionate about running. I used to run quite a bit, let's say maybe 6 to 7 years ago, and then I had a few accidents. I had an accident on a bicycle, and I had to kind of stop exercise for a while. It was a pretty serious accident. But I have been running 5K races again, and in fact, last week, I was in Florida visiting a friend who was getting married, and I actually completed my first unofficial 10K race in Florida. So if you don't know what a 5K race is 3.2 miles, a 10K race is 6.2. In fact, now I'm preparing to run the OKC Half Marathon at the end of April. So it's really fun racing, and I think there's a certain thrill to it. And especially at the end of the race, they usually assign medals. Now, generally what they do is they'll assign a medal for each age division, and there's usually their first through third place medals. And so on January 1st, I was able to run what they call the Commitment Day race, and that was sponsored by a local gym. And I wanted to run that race particularly because, one, I knew there would be a small number of participants in the race because it's January 1st. So a lot of people who are out really having a great time December 31st usually don't show up for a 5K race on the 1st. And so I thought, man, this is my opportunity to get a place with a medal, because I knew there was going to be a small amount of people. Actually, there was only 300 people in the race. And generally, for my age group, which is, I think it's 64 to 69, generally there's not a lot of people, running. And also on that day, by the way, it was only 23 degrees, and it was very cold north wind. So I thought, I've got this down. I'm gonna medal in this race. So that's the fun. So I really gave it everything I had. I crossed the finish line. I actually had 27 minutes, 47 seconds. That was a pretty good time for running 3 miles. And came across that finish line, and there was something really disturbing for me. I noticed that they were giving everybody a medal. And so essentially, here's what that means. is that means that even though I ran 3.2 miles in 27 minutes, 47 seconds, it didn't really set me apart from the five-year-old that ran the race in 45 minutes, because the five-year-old got a medal too. So we all got medals. And so in other words, there was no hero status for me on that day. And well, the reason is everybody was a hero just for coming out and running that race. Now, let's think about that a minute. That's kind of the way it is in this world, is like everyone feels like they deserve a medal, you know. And what about the people that really stand apart? You know, how do they feel? And so I felt a little bit like that. Like, well, here I am, 66, I'm back running, and I did pretty good time. You know, I deserved a medal. But anyway, everyone got a medal. So there's a reason behind this story. Now, with today's program, we are really going to begin our discussion of a man that literally did become a true hero. And, you know, if you look at today's society, I mean, we do want to honor people. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to honor people. There's nothing wrong with wanting to recognize people when they get out and they try effort. You put a certain effort into things, you know, to maybe improve their diet or improve their health. And certainly we should be, you know, encouraging each other and praising each other. But there really are some true heroes out there today that kind of get blended in with a whole group. And, you know, I think that's what we want to say about T.E. Lawrence. Now, essentially what I want to do today is I want to introduce T.E. Lawrence to you. And, of course, he's probably better known as Lawrence of Arabia. And so a lot of people may not even know who you're talking about when you talk about T.E. Lawrence. But the thing is, we are going to be talking about a true hero. And this is a guy, or this is a man, this is a hero that is still very much remembered. And, you know, he lived quite a long time ago. I mean, if you look at the way, you know, time flies here. And if you think about it, he was very... let's say he gained herodom, or maybe he was also a star of at the time. He was seen as a legend at the time. So, but he gained all that in World War I. And so there's a lot we can take from this book, and you know, a lot of people, let's say today, young people, and even some people, let's say even of my generation, my age, is you know, I don't remember much of the history of World War I. I know I don't remember having a history of World War I in school. I know we had American history, and I know we had maybe some history of I think I had one class, the history of Africa, and I had another one, the history of Europe. But never did I remember covering World War I. And yet, if you look at Lawrence of Arabia, he's still remembered today. And so what I want to do is I want to kind of get into Michael Korda's book with you. We're going to just kind of focus on his introduction, and I have a few comments to make about this introduction as well. And so if you don't know much about Lawrence of Arabia, if you don't know that he was a main figure in World War I, you know, he was, but the thing is he was in the Middle East during World War I. And I think so many people, when they think about World War I, they think about Flanders Field, they think about what happened in the trenches, but they don't realize that the British were fighting the Turks in the Middle East, or the Ottoman Turks. I think that's another way of saying it. And so here, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, or T.E. Lawrence, he became a hero at that time, and he really helped to bring down the control of the Ottoman Empire, and it's really changed the face of the world. The world we live in today, all you listeners out there, and what we see in the Middle East today, really, Lawrence of Arabia had a lot to do with it. And we'll bring out some other people that we've already talked about on the radio that also had a lot to do with it. But here's what Michael Korda says in his preface. And remember, the book is titled Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. So if you have not bought the book yet, you need to get it. And this is going to be a good series. It's going to be exciting. But here's what he says in the very beginning of his book. He said, it has been 92 years since the end of World War I. So now we know he published this book around 2010, so right now it's a little over 100 years. I think it's like 100 years and maybe 1 month right now since the end of World War I. It was November 1918, so here we are in 2019, and so it's 100 years and maybe a month. But again, I'm not great at math, so if I made a mistake, you can write and let me know. But he said it's been 92 years since the end of World War I, known until September 1939 as the Great War. Of the millions who fought in it, of the millions who died in it, of its many heroes, perhaps the only one whose name is still remembered in the English-speaking world is T.E. Lawrence. And he puts in quotes, Lawrence of Arabia. Now, it is interesting, he says that in the English-speaking world, but one thing that I was doing a little bit of research to get ready for today's program, and his name is very much remembered in Turkey today as well. And so, of course, there's historic reasons for that, because the state of Turkey was formed after the Ottoman Empire fell apart at the end of World War I. And so, he's known there because he led the Arab, the Arab tribes to defeat the Turks' control over them. Now, here's Korda goes and continues, says there are many reasons for this. And in other words, Korda is saying, why is he remembered? And he says there are many reasons for this. Even during his own lifetime, Lawrence was transformed into a legend and a myth, the realities of his accomplishments overshadowed by the bright glare of his fame and celebrity, and it is the purpose of this book to explore them as objectively and sympathetically as possible, for Lawrence was from the beginning a controversial figure and one who very often did his best to cover his tracks and mislead his biographers. And so essentially what you're going to find is when you get into this book, and I know you're all going to really enjoy it, and I know I'm really looking forward to really digging into it. But the thing is Lawrence was actually not seeking hero status for himself. You know, he wasn't out, let's say, I'm going to be a hero. He didn't want to be like the Superman on the front of a comic book, but he was very dedicated. But he was a very quiet person, and he didn't want the limelight. But he was thrust into the limelight because he was such a genius at what he was doing. And we're going to talk about that as we go through this. So he's remembered because of what he accomplished. And, he really hung around some really great people. We're going to talk about that here in a few minutes as well. Now, why is this book so exciting? I think the big point about this is that even Lawrence tried to hide kind of what he was doing. But he did work for the Secret Service, for British intelligence, maybe I should say it that way. And there was a lot hidden about what he accomplished until the 1960s. And then in the 1960s, a lot of these secret files began to be opened. And, of course, then Michael Korda was able to dig into some of those. And here's what Korda says about it. He says, since the British government began to open its files and release what had hitherto been secret documents in the 1960s, Lawrence's feats have been confirmed in meticulous detail. What he wrote that he did, he did. Now, he wrote a memoir of his time in Arabia, and it's called The Seven Pillars of Wisdom, which we're going to probably read sections of, or I'll read sections of to you when we get into discussion. And certainly the 60-plus panel, by the way, is going to be back here in the studio in the next couple of weeks. And, of course, Mr. James Brandon is going to be joining us for the first time for this series, and then he'll be with us from then on. But he said what he wrote that he did. If anything, he underplayed his role in the Arab Revolt, the 1919 Paris Peace Conference that followed the Allies' victory, and the British effort to create a new Middle East out of the shards of the defeated Ottoman Empire in 1921 and 22. So essentially what Korda is saying and what we're seeing is that here Lawrence downplayed his own life himself, but when you get into the records and when we get into the book, we're going to see that, you know, they shouldn't have been downplayed, that he really did accomplish some incredible things. Now, why is this so important to us, or why should it be important to us? Well, if you look at the Middle East today, and we really should be looking at it, I mean, we really should be paying attention to the news. Now, in America, it's really hard for us to do that, especially because there's so much misinformation. There's so much. The media is just so obsessed with bringing President Trump down that we're not really getting all the news in the world. And that's why we even have the program on KPCG Watch Jerusalem. And that's there as a news source to help you see what's really happening in the Middle East. But look, there's problems in the Middle East, and there are problems that world leaders have to confront there today. And the point is, when you read this book, you're going to find out that Lawrence could see these problems. He could see them. He was dealing with them. He had a direct hand in some of them. And in fact, we could probably learn some lessons from him. And that's the point. That's why history is so important. And if you really look at it, the Middle East should be the main focus of our attention today. Even our namesake, Mr. Herbert Armstrong. And that's, you know, we have the college here is named after Mr. Armstrong. Of course, the Philadelphia Church of God, you know, we're not the WCG or the Worldwide Church of God. We're the Philadelphia Church of God. And even at one time, Mr. Armstrong wanted that name. And of course, he could not have it at the time, but we were able to have it. And so he always told us, put your focus on the Middle East. That is where world tension is really going to explode. It's going to happen in the Middle East. And really, that is happening. I mean, the real, obviously, it's very serious for America what's happening, you know, between the Republicans and the Democrats. I mean, we're just exposing, you know, our underbelly to all of our enemies. You know, they see that we're divided. And of course, you know, Jesus Christ said a nation divided is, you know, can't stand, or a house divided can't stand. And then Abraham Lincoln saw that at the time of the Civil War. He said a nation that is divided itself can't stand. So we're opening ourselves up for, you know, some real problems. But, you know, the thing is, Lawrence can teach us a lot. And so many people don't know that he was the one that developed the tactic of insurgency. That was his specialty. It was one of the main weapons, you know, that he used. But now it's the weapons of our adversaries. You know, they're terrorizing us. And so as Korda says in his book, the life of Lawrence is more important now than ever. Now, if when we really get into his life, I mean, we can see that T.E. Lawrence, he just was a man that had many gifts. He was a scholar very early on. We're going to talk a little bit about his life if we don't get through it in this program, for the next program. And I'm going to be able to show you that his life is a lot like Winston Churchill's. And, you know, he really did have, he come from a troubled family. But it seems like it's the troubled families, you know, if the men or the boys in those troubled families, if they really have, you know, the go-get attitude, they usually become top leaders. Well, he had the same kind of a problem. But he was a scholar. What many people don't know about Lawrence is he was an archaeologist. And, you know, he got to go on, you know, like some of these archaeology digs, just like our students go on them. And he was had the opportunity, you know, to go to Carchemish, you know, and study the ancient Hittite, ruins. And he was able to go over all the Middle East. And, you know, when he was there, he was able to go out and tour it himself. And, you know, he was able to get into the language. He became a very good interpreter. He was able to mix with the people. It's incredible. So he's also, you know, a great writer. He wrote Seven Pillars of Wisdom. This is his, memoir from his time in Arabia. And it's considered one of the greatest books on war ever written. And so he's written some other things as well, and we'll talk about that as we go through the series on him. But again, he was a genius in the way he wrote, and he experimented with his writing and really wrote something of real value. He became a gifted translator. One of the things, you know, being an archaeologist, he also became, a map maker. And in terms of being a military strategist, he could remember the lay of the land so well, he could map out what needed to be done for the Arabs to defeat the Turks. I mean, that's how great he was. There's a real kind of a creative genius in map making, and he had considerable talent in that area. Here's what Korda says. He says, but beyond all that, he was a creator of nations. And so a lot of the way the Middle East is made up today, he was the creator of it. And, of course, we're going to be able to show you that Winston Churchill, the two of them worked together. And actually, Lawrence of Arabia or T.E. Lawrence and Winston Churchill were really pretty good friends. It's also interesting to note that he was a good friend of George Bernard Shaw. And, in fact, Shaw gave him some, tips on editing. Even for, his writing of, you know, the Seven Pillars of Wisdom. And so, I think you've heard us talk about Nancy Astor, from England, and he knew her. So he hung around in a circle of great, great people. So he was also, I think you could almost say, he was, a guerrilla fighter. And he taught the Arabs how to use guerrilla tactics. He was a diplomat, in the Paris Peace Conference. He made some real strong recommendations on what had needed to be done in the Middle East, and of course people did not listen to him. And there's still problems there today because of it. I think he was a natural leader of men. But as Korda says, he was a hero. He was a great hero. Let me just read you what Korda goes and says about this, and this is why I gave you the introduction, because I really understood what Korda was saying here. He says, "We've become used to thinking of heroism as something that simply happens to people. Indeed, the world has been, in a sense, cheapened by the modern habit of calling everybody exposed to any kind of danger, whether voluntarily or not, a hero. Soldiers, indeed, all those in uniform, are now commonly referred to as our heroes, as if heroism were a universal quality shared by everyone who bears arms, or as if it were an accident, not a vocation. Even those who die in terrorist attacks and have thus had the bad luck to be in the wrong place at the wrong time are described as heroes, though given a choice, most of them would no doubt have preferred to be somewhere else when the blow was struck." But here's the point about Lawrence, and this is what Korda makes, this is why he titled the book Hero, is Lawrence, however, was a hero in the much older sense. The classical sense, it is surely no accident that he decided to translate Homer's Odyssey, and like the heroes of old, he trained himself from early childhood for the role. Without the war, Lawrence might never have accomplished his ambition, but once it came, He was prepared for it, both morally and physically. And that's what I want to really emphasize as we go through this book. It's just clear that Lawrence, throughout his, from childhood, you know, through his teen years, through his college years, and even when he was out digging around the desert in the Middle East, he was being trained for something. And again, he was being trained to help organize the Middle East to what we see today. And so it is really quite interesting that way. Let me continue now with this quote. He had steeled himself to an almost inhuman capacity to endure pain. He had studied the arts of war and of leadership. He had carefully honed his courage and his skill at leading men. Like the young Napoleon Bonaparte, he was ready to assume the role of hero when fate presented him with the opportunity. He seized it eagerly with both hands in 1917, and like Ajax, Achilles, Ulysses, he could never let go of it. No matter how hard he tried to escape from his own legend and fame later on, they stuck to him to the very end of his life and beyond. 75 years after his death, he remains as famous as ever. Now, we know it's probably a little bit more than 75 years now, so add 10 years. Maybe because of the book's printing, he might be 85 years after his death. So there's a lot we can learn from him, and it's just very exciting. So that's all the time we have for today's program. Next time, I'll continue my introduction to the life of T.E. Lawrence, probably better known as Lawrence of Arabia. For the following series of programs, we are going to be using Michael Korda's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. So you can buy this book at Amazon.com, and you can find a great used copy of the book at abebooks.com. Of course, you can also check your local library. So remember, please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.